Hello and welcome to the South Carolina Lead. You trust the lead to keep you up to date on important state news, and we've been doing that more often as our state faces the COVID-19 virus. I'm your host, Gavin Jackson, and this episode was recorded on November 16th, 2020 from James Island. Just so you know, some of the information in this podcast may have changed by the time you've heard it. This podcast cuts through the noise and gives you South Carolina-specific COVID-19 news and stories. This episode features a continued look into election 2020 with two of the state's top political science professors, insight from one of the country's most outspoken voices on anti-racism, Professor Ibram Kendi. We hear about how one restaurant chain is growing amid the pandemic, and more positive news on the vaccine front. Additionally, we want to hear your stories, so we set up a voicemail box to hear from you all about your daily life in these uncertain times. And actually, we're specifically asking you to tell us about what you're planning to do for Thanksgiving. We're interested. We want you all to give us a call in and tell us what your plans are, whether you're going far and wide or you're staying home with just a few people. Let us know, 803-563-7169. Now for the latest in South Carolina. Currently, the spread of COVID-19 is ongoing, widespread, and not contained, according to Department of Health and Environmental Control data. There have been 3,873 confirmed deaths, and currently there are 185,390 confirmed cases being reported in all 46 counties as of November 16th at 4 p.m. Our current percent positive rate is 14.7%. That rate continues to be trending in the wrong direction. There are currently 769 people hospitalized with COVID-19, 210 patients are in intensive care, and 102 are on ventilators. The latter two data points have been declining over the past month while hospitalizations are increasing, which means those other two aren't far behind, unfortunately. So with all that going on, especially with the increasing rates across the country, please let us know what your plans are for Thanksgiving by giving us a call at 803-563-7169. We're going to start off our politics section with a lead from the Associated Press. Hate crimes in the U.S. rose to the highest level in more than a decade, as federal officials also record the highest number of hate-motivated killings since the FBI began collecting the data in the early 1990s, according to an FBI report released Monday. There were 51 hate crime murders in 2019, which includes 22 people who were killed in a shooting that targeted Mexicans at a Walmart in the border city of El Paso, Texas, the report said. Police agencies voluntarily reported to the FBI that there were 7,314 hate crimes last year. That's up from 7,120 the year before. The FBI's annual report defines hate crimes as those motivated by bias based on a person's race, religion, or sexual orientation, among other categories. Last year, only 2,172 law enforcement agencies out of about 15,000 participating agencies across the country reported hate crimes data to the FBI, according to the Bureau. Now, this disturbing data, which is obviously underreported by agencies, may have you feeling a bit down. So what can you do to fight against something like racism? Well, recently, the University of South Carolina hosted Professor Ibram X. Kendi, the Andrew W. Mellon Professor in the Humanities at Boston University and the founding director of the BU Center for Anti-Racist Research. He is the author of many books, including three number one New York Times bestsellers, How to Be an Anti-Racist, Stamped, Racism, Anti-Racism, and You, that he co-authored with Jason Reynolds, and Anti-Racist Baby, illustrated by Ashley Lukaszewski. The university hosted a virtual question and answer session with Professor Kendi and started off with what it means to be anti-racist.
The opposite of racial hierarchy is racial equality. I wanted to show that the opposite of racial inequity, which racist policies lead to, is racial equity, which is what anti-racist policies lead to. And I also wanted to show that typically when we identify policies and ideas as racist, when we describe people as being racist, their typical response is no, no, I'm not racist. And so the utility historically of the phrase not racist has traditionally been to just deny one's own racism or deny that a policy is racist or deny that an idea is racist, and it really doesn't have any other utility other than that. But by contrast, to be anti-racist is to actually have the willingness to recognize and admit the times in which we're being racist. And so really, in many ways, the book Had I Been Anti-Racist brought me on my journey, in which I was really looking at myself and really challenging and critiquing myself in the ways in which, you know, I had expressed racist ideas, particularly about Black people, and how I was able to come to grips with those ideas and really begin on a path to be anti-racist, which is a path that I'm still striving to be on right now.
Kendi says you can't force knowledge onto anyone, especially those who are closed off. But what do you do or say to someone who is expressing a racist perspective? Here's his advice.
So actually, when there are people who you feel, let's say they just expressed a racist idea, and you have a good sense that if you let them know that they just expressed a racist idea, they're going to deny it. What's a better route than just saying that was a racist idea is for you to ask them in that moment how they define a racist idea. And you and them come together about, you know, with a definition in which you develop one jointly. Most people are able to deny the ways in which they're being racist because they refuse to define terms. So what happens is they can be whatever because they don't even have a definition of the term racist. All they know is they're not racist. But when you ask someone to define a term and you ask them that's their definition, like, because you really want them to define it for themselves, then they can hold themselves accountable, which is ultimately what we all need to do to be anti-racist. And what we're really seeking to do is encourage individuals, like we're encouraging institutions, to hold themselves accountable.
Professor Kendi also gives this simple example of the inequity Black Americans face.
Well, first of all, I'm not going to try to explain that to somebody who's closed to it. I mean, but I think because you can't force knowledge onto anyone who's not open to receiving it. But there are people who are open to it. And with that, I would just show them the history, you know, of any particular sort of endeavor. And people do this all the time. I mean, when they, you know, they have two kids and they gave two of their kids two cookies and one of their kids took a cookie from the other kid, they're not going to be like, oh, well, I can't take that cookie back to create equity because I would be, you know, discriminating against a kid who now has three cookies. I mean, they're not going to say that, right? And so either people are open to a recognition in the ways in which society or institutions or policies took that cookie for Black people, and now we're trying to equalize the situation. And there's two ways to do it. You can take a cookie away. I would advocate for you giving that child two extra cookies, right? And so you don't have to take anything away from anybody. But either way, you know, people do this all the time. But I think, again, it's people being defensive because they don't believe that cookie was taken. What they believe is that there's something wrong with Black people, and that's why we have less.
You can see that entire question and answer session with Professor Kendi on UofSC's YouTube page. Last Friday on This Week in South Carolina, I sat down with two of the state's top political science professors, Gibbs Knotts, who's the Dean of Humanities and Social Sciences at the College of Charleston, and Dr. Scott Huffman of Winthrop University. We continued our look at election 2020 and had an insightful conversation on what the results revealed. Here's Scott leading off by talking about what he found to be unique in the current situation with the transition between president-elect and president.
Yeah, it is completely unique. You know, clearly, you know, the states where Trump was ahead last time and declared the winner were much more narrow than the size of Biden's victories in the states this time. And, you know, and obviously the popular vote is overwhelming, but that's sort of not relevant. But the votes in all the states, and the problem, I think, for going forward is how this undermines the public's trust in government and trust in the legitimacy of the process. And so, you know, we've seen that every time Trump, you know, sends out a baseless claim of, oh, there's, you know, shenanigans going on in this state, or, you know, there's something wrong with the ballot, it gets echoed and bounced around the you know, Trumpian echo chamber. But then it begins to seep out. And even folks who are accepting of the final outcome will still say, okay, yeah, my guy Trump lost, but you know, there is still some problems with it, when in fact there weren't. You know, the observers in every state, international observers, said it was an extremely smooth process, which is a miracle during a pandemic. So I think in the long run, this is just going to continue to erode trust in government, trust in the legitimacy of the process, and it's just going to, you know, continue to fuel, you know, both sides being so polarized.
So Gibbs, moving from speculation on what's going to happen nationally, moving to what we saw on election night, we were talking on election night. It's been more than a week since then. The results have been certified. I want to get your thoughts on, you know, what are some of the big takeaways? What's something that jumped out to you that surprised you on election night 2020?
So we saw, Gavin, so many polls that showed a close election, a potentially close election between Jamie Harrison and Lindsey Graham. And in the end, it wasn't really that close. And to me, it was just a reminder of some of the underlying fundamentals in South Carolina. Somewhere around 47% of folks told the exit poll said they were conservative. I think 42% said they identify with the Republican Party. I mean, that's difficult for any Democrat to get elected statewide. It's just, you know, it's a state that's set up for Republicans. Every statewide elected official is currently a Republican. Obviously, Lindsey Graham continued that. Doesn't mean a Democrat can't win, and we're seeing some examples in some surrounding states. But, you know, it's a tall order in this state, given the conservative nature of our electorate and the partisan identification and favorability towards the Republican Party in our electorate.
And Scott, I want to talk to you about demographics in the state. Obviously, we're talking about a tight Senate race over in Georgia, possibly them calling the presidency for Biden over there, too. And then we look in the North Carolina, obviously shifting demographics there, too, tightening races. But what's going on in South Carolina? You know, we do see a lot of transplants. We see a lot of people moving here. But looks like, you know, when it comes to our politics, they're holding steady, like you've been mentioning.
Yeah, it's sort of tending to reinforce what we have. You know, some research that Gibbs and I have worked on together with some of other of our colleagues looked at, you know, native Southerners and how they behave versus non-Southerners who live down here versus people who call themselves converted Southerners. And those converted Southerners are those folks kind of moving in, retiring, say, from New York or Ohio. And what they're bringing down is a kind of native conservatism that looks more like national conservatism when they retire. So while demographics are changing the racial makeup of South Carolina, you know, we're going to see an increase in Hispanics and Latino in this census. It's also in a way reinforcing the existing ideology in the state. And, you know, that is helping the sort of the conservative message weather multiple iterations of, you know, the McCain conservative message to the, you know, the Mitt Romney conservative message to the Trump message. And, you know, and that evolution is staying and keeping South Carolina as conservative as ever, even if the conservatism is changing and evolving on its own.
You can watch the entire discussion on our YouTube page, youtube.com/South Carolina ETV. The first Eggs Up Grill opened in 1997 in Pawleys Island and has since grown to 43 locations across the Southeast. And the pandemic hasn't slowed them down either. Since June, Ricky Richardson, who is the CEO of Eggs Up Grill, has signed agreements for 10 more locations and opened 9 more. 3 additional locations are scheduled to open from now until the end of the year. Mike Switzer with the South Carolina Business Review opens up his interview with Eggs Up Grill CEO Ricky Richardson by getting some background on the successful restaurant chain.
You know, Eggs Up Grill was founded in 1997 by Chris Godris in Pawleys Island, South Carolina. It's a breakfast, brunch, and lunch concept. Chris grew up in the diner business out of Rhode Island, wanted to create a change in life. So he and his wife moved to Pawleys Island, opened a breakfast place in the type of food that he was very familiar with, and created what was the first Eggs Up Grill. And since that time, we've grown to 43 restaurants, primarily and now exclusively through franchising. What's unique about our concept also is the ability for non-restaurateurs to come in and be very successful with this brand. In fact, the majority of our franchise partners, probably more than 75%, did not come into this with restaurant experience.
So that seems kind of brave.
Yeah. You know, it was very different for me as I joined, given my background. But it's really energizing to see the successes that people are able to create with this. And unique, and I think opportunistic as well for those who really enjoy being their own business owner, but also really enjoy the hospitality and community nature of a brand like Eggs Up Grill.
You are relatively new to the company, right?
I am. I joined in the summer of 2018 as we transitioned to a new majority ownership group. And we've relocated our offices from Pawleys Island to Spartanburg, South Carolina. It's been a blast. It's a smaller company than what I've historically worked with. Spent a little over 20 years with a brand called TGI Fridays. My last role there was running the U.S. business.
And now walk us through the company's growth spurt here during a pandemic. Obviously, you've had some effect from this, right?
Oh, yeah. It's been a hopefully once-in-a-lifetime type experience, devastating to so many different industries, and certainly the restaurant industry. But through some actions of the federal government Paycheck Protection Program, our franchise partners, being able to restart their business, we didn't lose a single restaurant through this. All of our franchise partners have made it through so far. Our sales levels are back to about 95% of where they were pre-pandemic. And I credit the hard work of our franchise partners to run safe, clean, enjoyable experiences in their restaurants. The community involvement has been really important. We've opened 6 new restaurants so far this year. We've got another 3 that will open between now and the end of 2020. And on track to open somewhere between 12 and 15 restaurants in 2021. So it will go down as an unforgettable year for a lot of challenging reasons, but also a lot of really positive successes.
And now I see that you are mostly in the Southeast. At what point do you expect to start branching across the rest of the country?
We are going to be entering Virginia, moving up towards the Mid-Atlantic in 2021. We'll be opening Tennessee next year. We'll be opening Alabama next year. So we've got another 2 or 3 years to run with a pretty tight focus on the Southeast, but high level of confidence that we've got a brand that can expand outside of just that geography.
Is a franchisee allowed to lock down a state, or do they need to go locality by locality?
Well, we have really 2 levels of relationship, Mike. One would be a franchise partner that comes on board for a single restaurant location. They've identified their neighborhood or their community or the town that they'd like to open a restaurant. We also have what's called a development agreement, and that would be a multiple restaurant agreement. Someone would sign up for a defined geography. We haven't done any statewide relationships, so it would typically be somewhere between a 3 or 5 restaurant commitment for a typically 3 to 5 year period.
Well, that certainly made me hungry. Oh, I had to do it. Thanks, Mike, for that report. And you can find other episodes of the South Carolina Business Review on southcarolinapublicradio.org. We have a quick medical section for you, and we're going to be talking about another successful vaccine. Despite the exponential acceleration of cases nationwide, putting us in the worst position since the start of the pandemic, we continue to see positive news on the vaccine front. We just heard about the efficacy of the Pfizer-BioNTech vaccine, and now we hear Moderna's vaccine has a 95% effectiveness. The National Institutes of Health reported that more than 30,000 participants at 100 clinical research sites in the United States are participating in the study, which launched in July 2020. Recognizing the disproportionate impact of the epidemic on underrepresented minority populations, investigators worked with community engagement partners to enroll a diverse pool of participants. 37% of trial volunteers are from racial and ethnic minorities. Another benefit of Moderna's vaccine is that it doesn't require ultra-cold storage temperatures and could be approved by the end of the year. Welcome to the wind down section, our little break from the news. We talk about life during the pandemic and want to hear your stories as well. Specifically, we want to hear from y'all about how you're doing Thanksgiving this year. Everyone, please call in. You don't have to leave us your name if you're not big on leaving your name. Just give us a quick bite about what your plans are for Thanksgiving. We want to get a little taste, a little pulse about what's going to be going on during this holiday season. And of course, we're going to start with Thanksgiving. And you can also tell us, you know, what you're going to be making, what you bring, what your favorite side dish is, which one you don't like. We want to know these things, but tell us, 803-563-7169. AT, do we have any other voicemails at the moment?
You know we do. You know we had to bump Rose just a little bit. Rose, I apologize. You are an OG caller, not even a first time, but a definitely a long time listener. So, Rose, let's roll it. You earned this, girl.
Yeah. Here we go.
Hi, it's Rose in Greenville County again. Just checking back with you. I did work the polls here locally on Election Day. We saw over 1,200 voters come to our precinct. Things ran very, very smoothly, hardly any issues at all. And we even had one extra sticker left at the end of the night. So that was wonderful to help people with their civic duty. In terms of the kids going back to school, Greenville County troubles me a bit. They're bringing back all of the elementary students 5 days a week, separating them by plexiglass, so they're not very far apart at all. That kind of concerns me for the teachers. And also as a trained engineer, knowing how aerosols work, and this being a aerosol-transmitted virus really bothers me. Don't know what I do yet, if the decision, whatever changes for older students. And my older student is impacted. I haven't really thought that far ahead, but I am a little concerned. Over the summer, we were going to Mass for church. At our church, they had it outdoors for a while, and then they had it inside the school gym. And we were okay with that. It was nice to distantly see people, very, very limited. And we knew that there was obviously good airflow rates. Recently moved back into the sanctuary, and we have since resumed attending virtually because we're just not comfortable with not knowing what the airflow rate is, as well as the very close quarters and people joyfully singing, things like that. It's a little hard mentally to take, spiritually to take, but we're trying to do the best we can. The only other thing I'd say is that my youngest child is really starting to struggle mentally, asking, you know, why do I keep them locked inside the four walls? And it's really hard as a parent to explain that I'm just trying to keep them safe the best way I know how, that there's no right choices. So the year is really beginning to strain on us as a family, but we're trying to muddle through the best we can to do whatever we can to help keep the medical system as least strained as possible. Everyone, please take care as the holidays are coming up and maybe think about new traditions.
Hey, Rose, love catching up with you, and thank you for being a poll worker. That's great to hear, and definitely sending you positive energy for you and the family because it is becoming difficult for sure, but totally necessary, needs to be done as we are seeing these rates just jump across the country. We've saw multiple days over 1,000 cases last week, and just worried that we're going to become, again, another hotspot. We're going to see another wave, which, again, just puts more pressure on everyone here, especially our frontline workers and those medical professionals, because that is just day in, day out, a lot to deal with, especially when you can get overwhelmed so easily as we've seen in our state. So you got to do it. You got to do it. And think about new traditions. I love that she just mentioned that. That's kind of what we're going for with these calls from folks. We want to know what your new traditions will be for this Thanksgiving, this Christmas, any other holidays you celebrate.
Let's not even go to Christmas yet, Kevin. Let's not mention that yet.
Okay? Oh, yeah, we're not there yet.
I know that.
It's so hard to even believe that Thanksgiving is just like around the corner. I don't know. I just, you know, after you're just in a daze with your blinders on for the election and then everything else, and now it's like, oh, that's next week. That's pretty wild.
Especially
I'll be going home. Yeah.
Especially with the Masters this past weekend, yeah. Because you're so used to that being April, you know? And so you're telling me that Thanksgiving is like, what, a week and a half away, and I just watched the Masters? Yeah. Like, that's not right. How strange is that?
That was pretty wild to see. Yeah. And those beautiful azaleas. I mean, whatever trees we were looking at instead.
The pine needles falling everywhere.
Yes. Oh, yeah, that wind on Sunday. Ooh.
Your boy didn't do well, though, in the Masters.
No, Bryson. He just I don't know what to say there.
He couldn't do it. Words, he couldn't cut it. Couldn't he was not good. He got outplayed by a 63-year-old.
I mean, a lot of people didn't have a great time, okay? Like, let's not just push this on Bryson. Notorious AT is notorious a Bryson hater. So
I am
just
a hater.
Needling
yeah,
me right
hater.
Now.
I am a hater. Gavin is an absolute Bryson stan.
But I mean,
he stands.
But you see, like, those other guys, you know, like Phil and, like, just a lot of big names just kind of really towards the end of the pack there. It's really surprising.
It was tough,
you know,
man.
Hey, it's the Masters. It's not like it's, you know, it's not like it's Linrick.
Oh, Linrick. Ooh, that's the first shout out we've ever gotten Linrick on the pod. We love Linrick.
Yeah. Our little local muni here in Richland County. I mean, I got to play. You were going to try and play. You couldn't make it work. But I barely made it work the other day when it was raining that one rain day we had last week.
It doesn't rain at Linrick, though.
It doesn't. It's its own microclimate. We only got rain on one hole in the back nine. And I was just like, what is this? How are the clouds parting? But I needed it. It had been so long since I've been out there. So it was nice.
This is a golf pod now, folks. I'm sorry.
I mean, everyone was watching. Then we had a hometown here or there when the Masters.
Local boy,
there.
Yeah, Columbia kid won. I think he's from Irmo. Technically, Irmo folks might split some hairs there, but Dustin Johnson.
I mean,
Columbia. He's Columbia. Let's be.
And
let's
he lives in Florida now. So that's. I did just start binging, getting into the HBO show The Undoing with Nicole Kidman and Hugh Grant. It's a wild ride. I'm gonna start watching the four seasons of The Crown. No, dude, you need to check it out. You will dig it. I'm saying.
I watched The Queen's Gambit, and I'm not going to spoil it because there's a big alien reveal at the end of it. But no.
I just feel like you. I'm
Everyone
surprised.
Needs to watch
I'm guessing
it.
Caitlin wanted to watch that, and then you.
She
just
was never
going to
watch it.
It.
I mean, she watches. She doesn't do TV right.
So you're the one that said, "Let's watch The Queen's Gambit."
Yeah. I mean, there was so
I feel
much
like
hubbub
like, oh,
around it.
Okay. All right.
I'll watch
well,
it.
The Undoing has hubbub too.
I'm undone.
Yeah, that's all they say the whole time. No, it's a wild psychological murder thriller with the Upper East Side from New York, and then you get Donald Sutherland in there too, which is always just an
he's
added
always
bonus.
Nefarious.
Oh yeah, I'm wondering what's afoot here, and it's only six episodes. The last episode's gonna be like I think the 29th of November, so it's gonna be wrapping up quick. So very just enthralled. And then, I'm rewatching season three of The Crown because the fourth season of The Crown is out.
No spoiler alerts. And, no spoiler alerts.
Yes. No spoilers, guys.
Everyone knows it's real. That's like saying, don't spoil Titanic for me. Come on.
Well, yeah.
Oh, I wanted them to be okay.
Anyway, but yeah. So let us know what you're watching. What we should be watching, because the days are so short now. It's dark. It's only 5:30. You're like, what time is it?
It's movie weather.
6 o'clock.
It's movie
My
weather.
God, I know. I'm a couch potato.
I'm undone.
I've become a little sofa spud.
You're just full of garbage jokes today, my man. My God,
I've
man.
Been hanging out down here for too long.
Take it out of here. Take it out.
A little sofa spud.
Gavin's he's gone closet drunk in that closet. Take it out.
Well, folks, thanks for listening as always. And again, if you have the first chapter of Moby Dick handy, post it on our iTunes or any relevant review, actually, as long as it's 5 stars. And of course, leave us a voicemail, 803-563-7169. Tell us about what you're planning on doing this Thanksgiving. We want to know. And stay up to date with the latest news on SCETV.org and SouthCarolinaPublicRadio.org. And don't forget to support your local newspapers. Also, consider becoming an ETV member. So when you're stuck on the couch as a little spud on the sofa, you can watch some good educational quality programming. Membership starts at $40, and if you pledge at the $75 level, you get access to PBS Passport. For the South Carolina Lead, I'm Gavin Jackson. Be well, South Carolina.
I'm undone!
Yeah, that's all they say the whole time.